So first of all, I have to start by thanking the organizing committee for inviting me to give this talk. Just to tell you a little bit about me, I am a recently appointed lecturer at University College London. And even though I am working in this quantum dynamics in biomolecular systems, my background is fully quantum optics, quantum dynamics in light-matter interactions. But it was just after many years working on these systems that at the end of my PhD, I just thought it would be cool to do something slightly different, and I started working on these systems. As the title says, because this is one of the, this is the first talk of this series, trying to show to this community what the challenges and problems in trying to understand dynamics in these complicated systems, then I thought I would give a talk that is more directly to a public audience. The purpose of this talk is just to put in your mind questions that have been addressed here and to see to what extent the tools and the methodologies, concepts, etc., that are developing the constant of in the context of quantum information might help or not to solve some of these challenges. But even if not, then maybe one community can learn from one another and develop new science. What I am plotting here is just the examples of the organisms in which, in very small scales of things happening here. Is it on? It's on, I think. Can you hear me? You cannot hear me? Okay, I'm not very skillful with microphones. Yeah? Close to my mouth. Okay. Like that? Cool. So as I was saying, these images here are just illustrating the organisms in which some of it is speculated that phenomena that happen in a very small time scale and length scale, and by that means nanosecond time scale or femtosecond time scale and nanometric time scale, might affect the functioning of these organisms, the biological function, whether they capture light and then produce lots of energy out of it, whether they smell or not certain molecules, whether they fly following a particular pattern, or whether that might affect our brain. So as you can imagine, when you mention these things, especially when you mention brain, a lot of fiction comes out. And it only takes one, two words on internet, quantum biology, and then a lot of amazing and amusing stories come up. So I did the same. And the first thing is I said, okay, I want to understand what people are understanding for quantum biology. So I type quantum biology on the internet, and I found this definition in this energetic medicine website. But actually, the definition is not so bad. So quantum biology is a speculative and interdisciplinary field that seeks to link quantum physics and the life sciences. That's not too bad from what it is happening. Yet, it is in a website when I don't really know what they are talking about. But the definition, for me, the definition is indeed a fact, even though it's in a fictional, as I would see, website. But I've been working on these systems, one particular system, photosynthetic systems, for a little while. And after working for a while and understand what is going on, what the questions are, etc., I can say that quantum biology translates in this language simply to understand biophysics at the molecular level, in a level in which the units that are involved are in the order of 10, 20 nanometers. And then you might expect that indeed quantum mechanical effects do play a certain role there beyond structure. So when you think about quantum biology in that sense, then that's not fiction. That's actually pretty serious science, because it is joining very different experimental techniques and theoretical techniques and very different communities to understand the molecular basis of life. So that's how I see quantum biology. And let me just illustrate the kind of systems that people and scientists are interested. So on the top of this slide, the first system illustrates a light harvesting system. This is a protein that is binding many pigments. The size of this molecule is around 10 nanometers, the diameter. Here is a protein that is found in the odor receptors in certain organisms, in particular in flies. And it is, again, a protein, again, around the same size. The dynamics that one is interested in, wants to see from the quantum viewpoint, is in the order of nanoseconds. What you see here, it is, again, a protein. So as you see, the common trait here is proteins. Proteins binding reaction sites, either pigments or other pigments in this case. Here, just another kind of particles. But in general, there is a protein that is playing a role there. In this case, it is a protein that is binding few sites, which can be electronically excited. And then you can create a radical pair here, which is a couple of spins. And those spins can travel separately. When I mean separately, it's no kilometers, but certain distance. And they apparently can be correlated for very long times. And what I'm illustrating here is an ion channel. Again, this is a protein. This is a top view. What you see here are the ions, and the ions passing through this channel. These are very massive particles in comparison to the excitations that you see here. The dynamics that might be relevant to understand whether quantum dynamics plays any role is in the order of microseconds. The phenomena that is interesting from the quantum viewpoint corresponds to the following. In a light harvesting system, when it comes to talk about the quantum phenomena there that is in dynamics, not just a spectra, what people have been investigating is superpositions of the collective excited states of these macromolecules. In this case, what is speculated is that the odor receptor not only works as a chemical sense, which means it not only distinguishes shapes, but also it might distinguish vibrations. So it might be a spectral receptor. So again, this is a debate, but this is the physical phenomena that might be involved and that can involve some kind of quantum dynamics. In the case of the migration of the birds, the phenomena that is might or might not be related is these long-time correlated radical pairs, which are very commonly known in chemistry. There is a whole spin chemistry based on radical pairs. And the question is whether these dynamics have some kind of coherent contributions and whether that might affect or not whether these pairs fly or not in a particular direction. And when it comes to the ion channel, the physical phenomena that is there is these channels are designed to select particular molecules. For instance, it is designed to select potassium. The question is, how do they select? In a way, it's not the same physical mechanism, but the question is, does it select it by detecting some vibrations, and therefore it's a vibrational mode involved there, or it is just the shape? So this is big enough to let the potassium pass or not? So again, it's a debate, but the kind of phenomena that might involve a quantum dynamics is the transport of those ions under conditions in which vibrations might be included. So before you focus in this last part of the slide, when you focus on these systems and you think about this phenomena, this is not so bad. And it actually seems pretty plausible to understand this phenomena in these nanoscale systems. So if one sees this field from that perspective, it doesn't seem to me that there must be much speculation about it. Obviously, it's this phenomena in very complicated environments, because these are not the kind of atoms in cavities that one might be used when one is working quantum information, but these are pretty large molecules with lots of degrees of freedom. But essentially, these phenomena are very plausible to occur in this. The fictional point comes when one tries to relate this phenomena that happens in a very short and small time and length scale to what happens in the macroscopic world. So let me start now by fiction by facts. So in March this year, a scientist in Greece, Skoulakis is his last name, published a report in PNAS. This report has the intention to assess whether the hypothesis about the odor receptors, that is, whether vibrations might be involved in sensing a particular molecule rather than just simply the shape was possible. The experiment is a biology experiment. So I'm not going to give you the whole details of this experiment. You can go and read the reference here. But what is interesting about this experiment is it's a biology experiment designed to test this hypothesis. So what they do, and I'm not a biologist, actually hated biology when I was in high school and and university. I really hated it, but it's been now that I have been appreciated what it is about. So the experiment is designed to condition flies to sense a particular molecule. And what is different, so they have two molecules that are the same in shape, but what they have different is two different vibrational modes. These molecules in certain concentration give a particular smell. And the flies are designed, so if the flies can really detect a vibration, then you can condition them to avoid or to go to a particular smell, just as you condition a dog. So if the dog does something that you like, you give him a cookie. If the dog does something that you don't like, then you punish it. So this kind of conditioning, you can do it with flies. And every time they were to the molecule that has a particular vibration, then they were punished. When they were somewhere else, they were not punished. So if actually this conditioning together with the ability of these flies to sense a particular vibration would work, then they should be able to observe this in the behavior. Actually, they observed that. So that is a biology experiment that is showing that it's plausible, a hypothesis. But that is not an experiment that shows that the quantum phenomena is relevant for that. However, it is a pretty motivating experiment because it's showing that most likely, in some situations, these flies might detect vibrations. The question now is, can we describe a very accurate and satisfactory model of this detection of vibrations? And in that model, is there any kind of coherent contribution present? So again, I think this is a pretty sensible question. It's not fiction. There is a fact. There is an experiment that is showing that these vibrations might be detected. And now there is a challenge for this community, in which these are, in general, for the scientific community, to describe a particular dynamical model that might describe what is happening in this case to an accurate level, but most importantly, to come up with an experiment that actually detects those coherent contributions, if any. So the challenge is pretty difficult, but at least there is a motivation that comes from a biology experiment. This is another fact, but it's slightly different from the previous one. So as you might, or not, I don't know, be aware, since 2007, there are several reports that mention the possibility that excitations in light harvesting systems, which is these molecular systems that capture light, might exhibit some coherent contributions in these dynamics. These three groups, it started with the report by Fleming's group in University of California, Berkeley, which is an experiment in the Fenamati Olsen, and actually one of the persons who participated in that is going to give the talk just after me. Not necessarily on this, but yes, we'll talk about it. Perfect. Then later, Greg Scholl's group here in the University of Toronto did similar kind of experiments. It's another different of complex that is isolated from a photosynthetic system. And at the same time, Engel's group, Engel, who had worked with Fleming, who moved to Michigan, then set up his own group, and then isolated again complexes from green sulfur bacteria and did the experiments. So the common trait to these three experiments is that you isolate, so very different from the previous experiment, which is a biology experiment. This is an experiment in which you isolate complexes from photosynthetic organisms, put them in a little bottle. I couldn't bring the bottle, but I saw it in Greg's lab. Put in a little bottle in solution, and with a very complicated and beautiful experiment, you are able to detect under laboratory conditions this possible oscillatory dynamics that might be associated to some kind of coherence in the system. So that is a fact. The challenge is, what do this mean? Are these bits fact or fiction? if they are, what implications might these experiments have, or what is this telling us about how these systems work under in vivo conditions? And even if this might not have any effect under in vivo conditions, then how we can exploit this to design artificial things. But of course, when you find that this happens in a condition that is in solution at room temperature, that is already on its own pretty surprising. Because if you come for a community that it comes in cavity and atoms, you know that you every time you are trying to cool this down very, very much to actually observe any coherence. But here is a signature of this coherent dynamics in conditions that were room temperature, pretty messy. So this, even if this applies or not for in vivo conditions, is already pretty outstanding that is happening in situations that normally you wouldn't expect it to do. So that is very important. But of course, when you come across reports of this kind, then many fictional stories are also created. And before I go into the fictional story, so let me just go back. So what we want to do now is we want to understand whether that dynamics that might be observed under laboratory conditions is relevant even just at this level. So what I'm illustrating here is the photosynthetic unit for purple bacteria. It's one of my favorites, so I had to mention it. And what we want to understand is whether those observations might affect the dynamics or tell us something about the kind of quantum dynamics of excitations in this unit, and whether that quantum dynamics might affect now a larger scale when you have hundreds of these complexes. And let me just not go on a higher scale, but at least if we can connect the dynamics that is happening here, whether this has any coherent contribution under in vivo conditions and how that might affect the dynamics in this long time scale. So this is one of the challenges. We still don't know. And we still don't know essentially because most of the properties that you can measure in this scale, like fluorescence times, quantum yields, etc., do not require any kind of quantum dynamics, quantum coherent dynamics, to successfully reproduce the scales that you observe in this regime. But actually, if you now want to measure different quantities, probably then in that case, this quantum dynamics might be important. But as I said, when you come across reports that are showing that it is possible that in these pretty messy systems at room temperature and in conditions that you would never expect to have any kind of coherent contributions lasting no more than 10 femtoseconds, then many fictional stories appear. So let me start by several statements. So this is a statement that appears somewhere. I'm not going to mention it yet. And it says, in the presence of quantum coherence, excitation transfer in photosynthesis is analogous to a Grover search algorithm. Is it fact or fiction? What do you think? Yeah. I wonder the same. So, actually, it is no fact, it is not a fiction. It is a fact that is written in the report. It is no fiction, but what this is pointing out is that they were trying to look for how to interpret the results that they had. So this might be a silly sentence, but still what it is inviting, is invited to people who know what you can do with coherence to think about this problem. That was the purpose of that sentence as far as I am concerned. That's why I took it. Well, of course, if you take it more seriously beyond a speculation, then you have to go and demonstrate. And actually, two reports later, in particular one from Brigitte Wallich, then try to see whether really one can understand this as a quantum search, and you can easily demonstrate that not, essentially because you don't have a speed up of the order that you would expect if you have a quantum search algorithm. Yes? This wasn't a question. This was a sentence in which people were trying to interpret why would these systems preserve coherence in the first place. Yeah. the relation is because, of course, if you, so what the quantum community know is that they know very well how to exploit quantum coherence. This is what this whole field is about. It's about exploiting superpositions and quantum coherence and correlations. So when one finds a system that is a pretty extraordinary system that is showing some kind of superpositions being preserved for longer than they expected, then you want to speculate, what are these superpositions for? And therefore, the scientists, which trying to look for arguments to say what are these superpositions possible for, presented this statement. So the statement is pretty controversial, but I think the key point that is was trying to hint at is that we want to find other brains that think about what coherence might be useful for in these systems. Because coherence, the story of coherence in these systems is a very long one. People have been wondering for long times whether coherent dynamics might be important or not. You also come up with the following statement. Bert Einstein conflation is a fundamental theory underlying high inefficient energy transfer in photosynthesis. Is that fact or fiction? Are you familiar with Bert Einstein conflation? No? Anyone is familiar? Yeah? Is it fact or fiction? It's a fiction. So this is very interesting because I find very remarkable. Normally, what you find in the news is bad news. And all the time people talk about news. But I find pretty remarkable that a scientific report on this photosynthetic system is able to inspire not just many communities to work on it, but also to inspire writers that write fiction to write a book about it. And this is a sentence from page 87, or many pages in the book by Ian McEwan. So it's the same author that wrote Atonement. And he wrote this novel called Solar. And that novel is just about the scientists who managed to create artificial photosynthesis based on exploiting coherence in energy transfer. So it's fiction, but I still find it very cool that this scientific report has transcended so many areas that is able to inspire writers to do this. I wouldn't be surprised, Ian McEwan has several books whose books have adapted to be movies. I wouldn't be surprised that in a few years we have a movie called Solar. Anyway, we also find the following statements. Quantum coherence in photosynthesis is nothing new, but now we know where to look and what to look at. Is this fact or fiction? What do you think? I guess it's actually fiction. It's as well written. Yeah, it's actually written as well in Ian McEwan, but as Thomas said, it's actually a fact. So you can only need to go and search. This is a report from 1997. These people who've been working on photosynthesis for a very long time, they have this very nice report written in the Journal of Physical Chemistry. And that they describe very well what is this all about, what is the debate between having or not coherent transfer, how this might affect, etc. So trying to understand what coherence does in photosynthetic systems didn't start in 2007 with that report. It's been for a long time. It shows that now they had a technique that is able to measure this in very fast time scales, which wasn't there before. I haven't finished with the facts and fictions. So this is a statement that you find in several places. Quantum coherence is key for high efficient energy transfer. Is that fact or fiction, again? Fiction, according to Thomas. What do you think? We don't know, really. That's a pretty good answer. So here is a report that actually it does depend on what kind of coherence you are looking at. So if you're actually looking at the way these excitations, these macromolecules share an excitation, because this is a many particle system, of course, under certain characteristics, you are going to find that the excitation is quantumly, is shared in a quantum way by many of these pigments. Whether the dynamics of this sharing is coherent, that's another thing. But when you're able to share, when this excitation is shared by several of these pigments, and then you keep that sharing as you move along, then actually you find that the efficiency of transfer is better. And this is a report written by Hoda, who is here in the audience, and she shows that in that particular situation, when you compare transfer by keeping some kind of sharing, the localization of this excitation as you move along, that gives an advantage to when you don't have that sharing. So as Thomas said, of course it depends of what kind of coherence you think about. But this is not a coherence. They've known this coherence for a long time. Excitons are collective states, collective quantum states of these systems. The coherence that they are interested in understanding is superpositions of those excitations, and whether keeping superpositions for a long time might help or not. And to begin with, under which conditions these superpositions would exist. So let me go back, and I finished that science fiction just right here, but let me go back to what we're trying to do. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to describe to an accurate level physical phenomena that happens in these nanoscale molecular systems and try to see whether even at this scale we are able to measure and witness coherent contributions of that dynamics. Once that is achieved, then we can move forward beyond fiction. So what I'm going to show now is what kind of questions you can ask in all of these, for all of these systems, in order to address that challenge. So, and I'm going to give an example of what we've done for photosynthetic systems. So in trying to understand whether quantum dynamics might be possible in quantum coherent dynamics might be possible in all of these systems, then the first question is we want to describe that in an accurate way. We want to witness it, that is measured in any way we can, without ambiguity that what we're measuring there is actually those coherent contributions to the dynamics. And we want to quantify. So if you have two systems that exhibit this coherent contribution, which one has more than the other one? Now, once you've done that, and you consider possible conditions in which these systems would actually live in vivo, the question is, what would these coherence-assisted processes would do for them? What can you do when this phenomena is present that otherwise you wouldn't be able? So if I want to translate that into a language here, is the basis of coherence is phase relationships between, for instance, these excitonic superpositions. What can these systems do by knowing those phases that they cannot do otherwise? Now, once we're able to understand this, then the question is this of biological relevance? And we'll see how that can be addressed. But even if it is not of biological relevance, just the fact that you have seen this in these nanoscale systems that you can, for instance, artificially put into the body, the question is how we can exploit that. Can we create with these very different new technologies? So in the remainder of the talk, which I don't know exactly how much I have, so I have 10 minutes. Yeah? I'm just going to talk you briefly through how we have addressed this in order to understand the effects of coherence in photosynthetic systems. So as I mentioned, my background is completely quantum optics, etc. But in 2002, when I started my PhD, my supervisor gave me this book and said, do something about it. This is interesting. I opened the book. I didn't understand anything. I closed the book and I didn't do anything. I dedicated my time to do quantum optics and other things. But it wasn't until the end of my PhD when I really got back into say, okay, let's see what we can do about this. And we came up with this report that came just before the 2007 paper of Greg Engel and Graham Fleming. And the point of this report is a very toy model, considers just a quantum system. But it makes three contributions, which I find that are important. So first, it talks in a language that is common to a community in the physics background, but in such a way that another community was able to read the message from that. That is, it's a report that is bridging the language of these two communities. Second, it generalizes into the quantum regime how you can think about performance measures for these systems, like efficiency, transfer time, etc. But finally, it shows that these systems are not so easy to understand, really. That if you want to understand how efficient these systems are, this is going to be an interplay between having coherent dynamics that preserve, for instance, symmetry properties. I am considering here one of the circular light harvesting systems. But also, they need disorder to have higher efficiencies. So after that, we then dedicated our time. We have been dedicating our time to describe in a more accurate way what is happening in these systems. And then when you come up with that, there are very different manners to approach this. But in the language that you might be familiar with, essentially what we're using is open quantum system dynamics to describe what the dynamics of the degrees of freedom that we are interested, in this case the electronic degrees of freedom, is under very different conditions of interaction with what we call the bath, which is essentially a bath of harmonic oscillators, kind of with a kind of complicated coupling to that bath, which is not as smooth as in the systems that you might be familiar with. So I have a minute here. And in order to approach that, again, you can use different methodologies. Perturbation theory, we love perturbation theory, so if you do perturbation theory with respect to a particular part of your Hamiltonian, then you find one regime. So this is the regime in which you have excitons and they move in a quantum way. But if you now are in a regime in which that feature of the excitation is lost because the interaction with the bath is so strong, then you are in a regime in which there is no coherent dynamics and you just have an excitation and the excitation in your system as if you had a ball jumping in the system. Unfortunately, these systems, they don't work neither here nor here. They work in an intermediate regime, and that has made several communities to come up with methodologies and conceptual approaches that allow us to describe excitation energy in this regime. So later in the afternoon, you'll see the talk by Asan, which will describe one of these possible methodologies. We have done a couple of things which are written in this archive, which generalize what people have done for donor acceptor systems to many site systems. The question is, if coherence is present, then how you can exploit this to do something different that you cannot do in the absence of that phenomena? And we published a report in 2010 in which we show that if you have coherence and correlations in this system, that allows you to distinguish the symmetry. And then you have efficiencies that the red is if you have a very symmetric state, so then that one will give you larger efficiencies. And if you have an asymmetric state, that will give you less efficiencies. The most important point is that this discrimination between symmetric and asymmetric can only exist if you have coherent dynamics in your system. Whether these systems do that in biology, I don't know, and to be honest, at this point, I didn't care, because my question, the question that I was trying to answer here was at least what kind of phenomena can be achieved that no classical phenomena will allow you to distinguish that, because that symmetry is only given when the Hamiltonian dynamics is relevant. And so on, there are other reports in which we analyze how electronic interactions might delay or help the transfer to a particular trapping site. And finally, what we've done recently is to see whether now, when you consider in other systems, whether you have coherent or incoherent, whether that makes a difference. And what we find is that, at least at this length scale, there are very little difference, whether coherence is present or not, when you focus on what is the probability that the excitation is in a particular site. What this all has taught us so far is that if we want to understand what coherence does in these systems, we have to look in a different way. It is not just about getting the excitation to a particular point and trying to find the probability that it reached that point. We need to think about a different performance measure if we want to understand what coherence does in these systems. But this is all about considering situations that are isolated. You isolate these complexes and you try to understand what they do. The question is, again, what does it matter this for biology? And when you want to answer this question, like in the flies, then you need to think about the biology of these systems. One particular thing about biology of these systems is the fact that these systems change when you put them under different light conditions. For instance, if you put them in high light conditions, they change the wavelengths that they absorb. If you put them in low light conditions, it's very different from high light conditions. Not all the systems do that, but some of them do. So knowing that, the question that we're asking is, under high light conditions, these rings absorb a particular frequency. And in under low light conditions, they absorb a different one. The question is, do exciton dynamics also change when these spectral signatures are changing? Because if this happens, then this is telling us that these systems not only adapt their spectral response, but actually they adapt their dynamics. So we're working on this question at the moment. I can't present the results yet. But with that, I would like to finish. And I go back to the question. This is my definition of quantum biology. It's up to you to judge whether that is fact or fiction. Thank you very much.